Welcome back to Giants.com and Big Blue Kickoff Live. Who's back together again? Lance Meadow, John Schmoke with you. It's been a few weeks, but we're back with you. Jeff Fiegels, of course, was on earlier in the week. He is down in Miami on business, so it's Meadow and Schmoke today on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And getting ready for a pretty darn important game, Lance. The Giants have lost three straight. They're 2-3. The Ravens have lost two straight. They're 3-2. So somebody's breaking a losing streak, and both these teams, and I guess the Giants more so by a little bit, really need to win this ball game. And you just get the sense that the momentum's starting to build with the three-game losing streak, and you got to stop it before it gets out of control. And I think it's important coming home off of two tough road games for the Giants to come out and play a good football game and beat, I think, a team that's very similar to them and, you know, how they're built, their issues, and where they stand. And it's going to be a tough game, but the Giants really need to come out with a victory.
Yeah, it's important because this is also the final home game before the bye, too, John. They're going to go to London to play the Rams, and then you have the bye, then you have the three-game homestand. But, you know, clearly it's important to gain some momentum as you lead into the bye week. And as you noted, I do think there's a lot of similarities between the Giants and the Ravens because you have two teams over the last few weeks that have been struggling offensively. Put the defenses aside, but what's very similar is the Ravens, they just made a change in offensive coordinator because they're barely putting any points on the board. They only scored 10 points in their last game against the Redskins, and the Giants, as we've been discussing all week, it's been well documented, trying to get this running game going, trying to get out of this funk to get the receivers to move the chains, pick up first downs. You know, they've had some troubling issues that I think have carried over for at least the last three games, that you could say.
Yeah, and both teams have played a ton of close games, too. The Ravens are historical in terms of the number of close games they've played. How about this number? The Ravens are the only team in NFL history to start consecutive seasons with their first five games being decided by six or fewer points.
It's remarkable.
That is a crazy stat. Yeah. Last year, they were 1-5 in their first six games, and their first six games were decided by six or fewer points. This year, obviously, they're 3-2. The Giants, on the other hand, every game they've been in this year has been a one-score game except for one, the Vikings game. They beat the Cowboys by one, the Saints by three. They lost to Washington by two. I mean, you don't get much closer than that. They lost to the Vikings by a couple scores, and then the Packers was a touchdown game. So I think just overall theme, before we get into some of the specifics you mentioned, Lance, this is probably going to be a nail-biter game. It's probably going to be a one-score game late in the fourth quarter. It's probably going to be an ugly game at times and not pretty on the eyes, but whatever team, to me, makes fewer mistakes or more big plays to get scores is the team that's going to win this game, because it's going to be one little thing here or there that can turn the corner or flip the switch that can be the difference between a win and or a loss.
Well, which has been the case even in the Giants games.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how many plays can you pick out, John, over the last few weeks? One play, all of a sudden momentum shifts. For example, Eli Manning to Will Tye on the very next play, the strip sack and the fumble, and you walk away with potential points leading into the half. Instead, you get nothing. So, yeah, I agree with you. Little things like that certainly could be the difference. And adding to that narrative, John, I would throw out special teams. You know, the Ravens special teams. Everybody talks about their offense. Everybody talks about their defense. The one unit that actually may be their best strength is actually special teams. They have Pro Bowlers between their return man and Devin Hester, their punter and their kicker. Great range in terms of the kicking game. They're number one in terms of average return on kickoff so far this season. Field position on special teams alone could very well decide this game.
And throw on top of that, Dwayne Harris did not practice yesterday with his toe injury, so we got to see how the Giants' special teams be impacted. We could see Bobby Rainey perhaps on kickoffs if Harris can't go. And then on punts, is it going to be Odell? Is it going to be, you know, another one of the receivers?
Sterling
both Shepard and
something.
Cruz both fielded punts in the preseason. I don't think you'll put a DB out there because of all the injuries. Can Rainey do punts? Will they put him back there for that? Can Paul Perkins contribute in that area as a return guy? All things that we'll have to figure out as we get closer to the game. All right, now let's focus a little bit, Lance, on some of the specifics you mentioned off the top here in terms of the Baltimore Ravens. And you mentioned the change in offensive coordinator, Mark Trestman gone, Marty Morningwig in. Giant fans should be very familiar with Marty Morningwig based on his time with the Philadelphia Eagles when he coached there with Steve Spagnuolo. Steve Spagnuolo had some really good cuts about him yesterday. And going through some of the stuff the Ravens have said and their beat reporters have talked about this week, to me, Lance, this is going to be the biggest shift, and I'd love to get your take on it. I think the Ravens will commit to the running game more. That seemed to be a complaint that they did not run the ball consistently enough in terms of their ratio. For example, last week, I think they ran the ball around 9 or 10 times in the first quarter, and then the rest of the game they ran it only
huge
six
disparity.
Or something like that. So they got away from the run a lot in that game last week. And I think the way Jim Harbaugh wants to play is John Harbaugh wants to play is that he wants to pound the football. And then the second part of that equation is get the ball down the field. And Mark Trestman was not getting the ball down the field enough. Joe Flacco's yards per attempt was, I think, almost a career low for him. Even guys like Mike Wallace and Brashad Perryman, guys you would assume would have, 15, 16 average yards per catch, they're down in like the 11, 12, 13 area. So I think that's the big difference. We're going to see a lot more running with Terrence West, and I think we might see the unveiling of Kenneth Dixon for his first big role game of the year for the Ravens. And then I think off of that running game, we'll see a lot of play action. We'll see a lot of balls down the field, especially considering the Giants' injuries at safety and their injuries at cornerback.
Yeah, I think they want to open up the offense, as you alluded to, John. I think that's the key here as you get ready for this contest. And, Justin Forsett, who was let go, that's why, as you mentioned,
He's with Detroit now, by
correct,
the way.
He's with the Lions, so Dixon could get a bigger role moving forward. Terrence West, who actually had a very productive first quarter. If you go back to his numbers against the Redskins, then, like you noted, they got away from that. And, with respect to plays down the field, it was interesting. I don't know if you saw
against
the play.
Against Washington, by the way, 11 carries, 95 yards in the game, but I think 70 of those might have come in the first quarter of that
game. And he had a long run of 35. So.
And the week before, by the way, he also rushed for, I think, 80-something yards. So he's had two good weeks in a row.
He's been very productive, but like you said, it's more about the volume. It's not the yardage per carry. It's the fact that you only give a running back who averaged nearly 9 yards per carry 11 carries. You would expect a running back like that in a close game to get double that.
It reminds me of what we talked about with the Packers last week, where Eddie Lacy was averaging 5 yards per carry on the season, but he was only averaging 14, 15
carries
a game.
They weren't pounding the football. Yeah. And with respect to the big plays, what I was going to point out was at the end of the Redskins game, remember the Ravens threw it down the field with Perryman. That touchdown was overturned by replay. Those are the types of things that I could see them trying to add to this offense now that Morningwig is a part of it, because between Kamar Aiken is another wide receiver who hasn't gotten a lot of play, but if Steve Smith doesn't play, he'll probably have a big role. They
Something
have tight
tells
ends.
Me Steve Smith is going to figure out a way to play. He's a tough son of a gun.
You would assume he would, but the fact that at least right now he's been on the injury report keeps him in question. But their tight ends can also get vertical. Dennis Pitt is a guy that can really stretch the field. And
good
Perryman, who was injured last season, now is trying to take on a larger role. So they have weapons that can stretch the field. The problem is, as we've been pointing out, are they actually going to take the chances to give those guys opportunities to make plays?
And Flacco certainly has the arm to get it down the field.
One of the strongest arms
in the league, absolutely. But much like the Giants, the Ravens have some injury issues. So I guess we should get into that next, and it could impact their offense, Lance, in a couple different ways. You mentioned the injury to Steve Smith. I do not know what his practice status is yet today. Have you seen anything?
I have not seen anything. They are actually practicing as we speak.
But he did not practice the last two games, the last 2 days of practice, excuse me. And also on offense, the bigger injury to me is to guard Marshall Yanda. He's dealing with a shoulder injury, an important part of that offensive line, and Ronnie Stanley was limited in practice, their left tackle, with a foot injury. So those are two issues on offense that could affect the two things we just talked about that the Ravens want to try and do. Run the football behind their big man Marshall Yanda, and then have enough protection to throw it down the field to their wide receiver. So you would hope that the Giants' defensive line, as talented as they are, can take advantage of a couple of those injuries.
Yeah, the Ravens have had some issues in pass protection, especially the last few weeks since they've had this game of musical chairs, that I like to call it, with respect to their offensive line. I think it's encouraging, John, and this is just my pure speculation, that Ronnie Stanley is limited because he was out the last few games. He wasn't even on the practice field, and that's their starting left tackle. What they did was they took Alex Lewis, their starting left guard, and he's been filling in for Ronnie Stanley at left tackle. Then you bring in a backup guard. I mean, they've really been moving players around, but the fact that Stanley's back practicing is encouraging for them. Their starting center has always been the same, and Rick Wagner, we should note, their right tackle, also has shown up on the injury report. So both tackles have been banged up, and both guards have been moving around, and they just brought in Billy Turner, who was let go from the Miami Dolphins a few days ago. So you could see that they're planning in case they may be down an offensive lineman or two. But, you know, how many times have we talked about this? And this is why I'm a little bit leery, John.
Yeah, I know.
We've brought up previous teams, right? We always have this narrative on the pregame or whatever it may be. This is an attractive matchup for the Giants.
Well, last week, Packers.
Secondary.
Lance, their two quarters are out.
That's what I'm saying.
They're going to throw the ball all over the place. Yeah. And they couldn't even get 200 yards
pass. So that's why, I mean, listen, we're giving you the facts and we're laying it out that it does look attractive, but there's a distinct difference when you evaluate the NFL in seeing something attractive on paper and whether or not that translates to the football field.
Those correct.
Are two very different factors right there.
Absolutely. Defensively, the Ravens, I mean, I would say they're pretty healthy. I mean, Elvis Dumervil has been dealing with this foot injury.
Off-season foot surgery.
I think he'll probably figure out a way to play in this game. He played last week, so you figure he's going to be able to get out there.
He wasn't very effective, though, even when he was in.
Correct. Terrell Suggs, who missed practice earlier in the week, he was out there. He was fine. They just gave him a day off. Mike Wallace practiced. Sharice Wright practiced as well, who has struggled at corner at times this year. So their defense, I think, is in decent shape. Though C.J. Mosley was dealing with an injury, he still has not practiced this week. He's the one big guy on defense to keep an eye on. He's a great coverage guy, and he's really their leader in the middle in that linebacking core. So if you keep an eye on the defensive side of the ball, it's Mosley and Dumervil. So, again, we talked about the similarities, Lance. Both these teams have some injury issues. So I think today's a big practice day for the Ravens. I think they have real practice on Friday. They don't have the Giants' staggered schedule where they practice Saturday, don't practice Friday. So, to me, this is a big day today. You know, look around 2-3 o'clock at the Ravens injury report. That's going to be important for the Giants.
Well, and I think the one position to focus on is the offensive line more so than defense. You threw out a couple of guys that are banged up on defense, but to be honest with you, John, I think they have a great deal of depth at a lot of the positions where
they're
hurting.
They're good.
So, you know, you look, for example, Dumervil's been banged up. Well, Albert McClellan, who's his main backup, has been playing, and he's been extremely effective.
Yeah, Dumervil's barely played this year.
Correct. So, I mean, they've experienced a lot of games without him. I don't think that's a significant loss. The Mosley one, as you keyed on, you know, he's been their middle linebacker. He's been the key guy setting the tone, wearing the helmet. So
he had a great pick last week against Washington.
And then he fumbled it, though, into the end zone, and it was ruled a touchback, which is a bizarre rule that I'm sure Harbaugh wasn't too pleased
about. Well, he was trying
to
reach the ball over the pylon to score. And I'm sure he wasn't wearing those fancy receivers gloves that help you stick.
It's understandable.
And boop, flip right into the end zone.
Well, but I don't know if you heard John Harbaugh was asked about this at his press conference, whether they should look at that rule. Because I think when you take a step back, just think about this. Mosley picks off the Redskins, and Washington was deep in its own territory at that point of the game.
He picked it off at like the 20 or 25
correct.
Line.
So he's running it back. He goes into the end zone. He coughs up the football, as you just mentioned. It bounces out of the end zone, so that's an automatic touchback. So the argument is, well, we're now giving the Redskins back the football with decent field position, and we're punishing the team that actually forced the turnover and so forth.
I mean, that's been the rule for so
long. No, it has. I agree with you. And it's just something that he sort of thought maybe the competition committee should reevaluate, given the fact that the team that just coughed up the football all of a sudden gets it back because the team that forced the takeaway made an error. It's just something interesting to evaluate.
And you could argue,
forward.
Though, good job by the Redskins offense forcing Mosley to fumble on the return. So you're rewarding
you certainly
them for that.
Could. I mean, granted, from what I've seen, I don't think Washington did a great deal of effort there.
Not on that particular play.
But
you're generally,
saying in the
event
that
trying
they,
to go into the end zone, let's say, you know, a running back's going over the top, the ball gets knocked out before he hits, you know, breaks the plane, and the ball goes into the end zone, and let's say out the back, just to give an example, you should reward the defense in some way, shape, or form. But the question is, if it goes out of bounds in the field of play, the offense retains the football.
Correct.
If
that's
it goes out of bounds in the end zone, why should position switch? Maybe
there you go.
Maybe you move the ball back out to the 20, and that's how you punish the
that's
offense,
fair.
And
yeah.
you give them like a second and goal from the 20 or something.
You take
like
away
that.
A down and you give them a 20. Yeah,
something
I think that's
like
reasonable.
That, maybe
that's reasonable. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Because the point about it is that, like you said, any time you lose the ball within the playing field, the boundaries outside of the end zone, you're retaining possession, even
correct.
If you make a mistake. Mm-hmm. So that's something that, you know, was interesting that came out of that Redskins game.
And just a couple of things, folks, for the Giants specifically before we move on here. And we've kind of beaten this, you know, like a dead horse all week, so I don't want to get too far into it. Just a few important things to keep an eye on here. To me, Lance, and you're going to hear on our pregame show on Sunday Eli Manning talk about this, and I don't understand why the media doesn't talk about it more when they ask questions about what's going on with the Giants offense. I mean, you look at Odell Beckham Jr.'s quotes from earlier in this week. I'm going to bring it up here, and I should have had this ready before the show, but I will bring it up now. It was very early in his interview. Here's his transcript, all right? They're asking about the offense and what they've seen and how much and how they fix it. This is the question. Are teams doing the same things over and over to make it difficult for the offense? This is Odell Beckham Jr.'s answer. Same thing over and over again. Too high safety, six in the box. They're making it difficult. And I talked to Justin Pugh yesterday, and I asked him this. And this was his answer. He goes, John, and you'll hear this on the radio pregame show also. Get a little tease. John, if the other team puts six guys in the box, you have to run the football. And if teams are going to play nickel, and they're not bringing the safety up, and they're going to have two linebackers sitting there, and they're going to have four defensive linemen, and you have five offensive linemen and a tight end in the game, that is six blockers to six defenders. Lance, the only way this thing's going to get better and it's going to get solved is if when a team puts six guys in the box, that's not even base defense. Base defense has seven guys in there. This is only six to six blockers for you. If you can't run the ball on six men in the box, you're not going to win football games. And that is the simple truth. And they did run it fairly well against Washington.
Yeah.
In that game when Shane Vereen was in there before he got hurt.
120 yards, nearly six per carry.
Did a good job, but they didn't commit to the run.
And, volume wasn't there.
The last 20 or so plays were pass plays, if I remember right, going back to that game.
No, you're 100% right. Yeah.
And then the following game against Minnesota, they ran the ball okay in the first half.
But the volume went down, though.
They go down 14 points.
Correct. Game situation contributed
to
that a little bit
more. But, right, it's volume. So you have to first, and now against the Packers last week, it was a mess. They couldn't get anything going. The running game was a disaster. So first you have to run it well. And then once you run it well, you have to commit to it. Because right now teams are saying, Giants, we're not going to let you throw a deep pass on us. It's just not going to happen. We're putting our two safeties deep. You're not going long on us. Whether it's a zone or a man under or whatever you're talking about, you're not getting deep. We're going to dare you to run the ball 35 times for 200 yards, and we don't think you're going to commit to it. We dare you. Do it. And in my opinion, until the Giants meet that challenge and just run the ball against those six-man fronts and punish opposing defenses for having two safeties deep, you're putting four or five receivers out in pass coverage, Lance, against seven guys. It's hard to get open when you're playing five on seven.
You got some help on the back
end. It just is. So, to me, that's the simplest thing here, is once you run it successfully, the safety comes up, then you can hit big plays. And that solves a lot of your issues all at the same time.
Well, and you also get into better third downs, too, which has been a troubling issue for the Giants as well. Everything feeds off the running game, as you just alluded to, John. And, you know, I brought up my chart here, 24 carries in week one, just to see how the volumes dip progressively, 32 in week two, 21 in week three, and then the last 2 weeks, 18 and 15, in terms of the number of carries. Now, one of the things I pointed out before the Packers game, I said, Green Bay's number one in rushing defense. So you have to go in thinking, okay, you may not have a lot of success. But with that being said, that doesn't mean you can't stay true to the running game, even though they're highly ranked.
For example, last night, Broncos are a great defense, right? Chargers didn't have great success running the ball. Melvin Gordon still had 25 carries. He only got 96 or so yards.
This coming from a Melvin Gordon fantasy owner, by the way. We should just note that. Anyway, continue.
But the
point is
that
you're so invested in
the
subject.
They committed to the run. And even though they're only getting 3 yards a pop or whatever it was, and he had the one long run, so the numbers were skewed, they committed to it, and it made a difference.
Yeah, and that's what I get back to, whether you're having success or not, because you brought up the fact that, you know, you have success, it makes things easier. But even if you don't have success, John, I think you got to go with the patience feel that sometimes, and running backs will tell you this all the time, you give them five or six carries, they start to gain rhythm, and then all of a sudden a hole breaks open. So you got to give them the seventh or the eighth carry. You can't just say, well, after five carries, we're going to abandon the run. And with Baltimore not getting into a lot of high-scoring affairs, you know, this game, like you said, it could be ugly. It could be low scoring. It may be 20-17. If it's a 20-point game where you have to score 20 points to win, you should still be able to run the ball consistently in terms of volume all four quarters. You should not be put in a position where you have to abandon it by the time you get to the third.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the key here. For the Giants, it's about sticking to the run and saying, hey, you know what? Success or not, we're going to stay true to this. So we're going to stay balanced, and then, hey, we're going to break through, and we're going to grind this defense down, and we're going to hope that we finally get that opening. And, you know, if we had to feed off of the running backs in the short passing game, so be it. But we can't just say to ourselves, oh, the deep ball's not here, so all of a sudden the offense falls apart. I mean, that can't be the philosophy.
Yeah, and it's not. Look, Ben McAdoo has said it a million times that, you know, he likes to run the football. But I get it. When you're only getting, you know, like against Green Bay last week, you're getting 1 or 2 yards per carry, it's hard to stick with it. And it takes patience. Especially against a team like the Packers that has Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback and you're afraid they're going to put up a lot of points on you. I get it. But the Ravens aren't going to run away from you. So you stick with it. You stick with the run, you run it. Some news from Baltimore. Zrebiak?
Sure. Zrebiak, yeah.
Baltimore Sun. Zrebiak. Oh, you haven't had the pronunciation right.
Well, we tried to touch base.
Very good.
Prior in the midweek.
Rick Wagner, right tackle, back at practice. Kendrick Lewis, also returned practice.
Okay.
Now, here's who didn't practice. It's a much longer list. No Steve Smith Sr. No Devin Hester. No Elvis Dumervil. No C.J. Mosley, no Marshall Yanda. And his quote on Twitter, his quote on Twitter, looks unlikely that any of those five, Smith, Yanda, Mosley, Dumervil, Hester, will play Sunday against the Giants.
Wow. Hester must have had some type of a setback because he looked like he was making progress. If that's the case, Yanda, I know there was a report by Jason LaCanfora from CBS Sports earlier this week, John, that said there's a very good chance he won't play.
Right.
So I think the Ravens, that's a big reason probably why they signed Billy Turner from the Dolphins, that they at least were anticipating that. But it's interesting how, so Stanley could potentially come back, their starting left tackle, only for them now to lose their starting right guard. Not necessarily a comfortable situation for the Ravens in the early stages of the season.
I would say not. We'll touch on all the other Giant topics as we go along. Just wanted to get that running game thing off my chest. I don't understand why there's not more talk about that when the media asks the players all these questions about how you fix the offense. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Anyway.
Balance. It's key.
201-939-4513. If you make the defense guard against two things, it helps you a little bit. Let's go to the phones. We have some open lines, folks, if you want to get in. So get on the phone and say hi. Robin in Atlanta. He'll lead us off. Robin, what's up?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Robin. What's up, pal?
Yeah, man. I just want to mention something about defense that I noticed. Like, when they're going to tackle and stuff, they taking, like, bad angles. And
who specifically?
Not really. They committing too much, like, you know.
Well, does somebody in particular jump out to you, though, Robin?
Or a position group?
No, just, like, the linebacker, sometimes the linebacker. Can you hold on a second, man?
What, are you putting us on hold?
I don't know if the person next to him or us on hold. This is the first.
Robin just hung up on us. All right, Dave, get rid of him. All right. I don't know. You call on a radio show. You can't tell us to hold on a second.
Well, listen, we got plenty of time on our hands. You know, we'll play some music. Dave will put up a graphic. We'll wait. We'll stand by here until Robin returns. We'll get back to you. That may be a first. I don't know if I've experienced that
I've
before.
Never gotten that one before. Let's go to Jeff in Rhode Island. He's up next. Jeff, how are you, pal?
Jeff, are you okay? You cooperating, or should we put you on hold as well?
I don't think that's necessary.
Okay, maybe, just checking.
Maybe you could see fit to give me an additional 30 seconds.
I think we can give you as much. Yeah. Jeff, you are one of our more efficient callers, so I'm happy to give you as much time as you like.
Well, besides being one of your oldest as well.
That is
and
true.
Loyal.
Yeah, absolutely. No question there.
Look, in regards to the running game, I find it curious that after Johnson was put on the IR, that the Giants, you know, didn't go out and try and, bring somebody on board to be the blocking fullback. I find it hard to believe that they thought that our tight ends were going to get the job done blocking because, as we all know, they can't seem to manage that very well at all. So what are you thinking about that? Why didn't that happen?
Interesting question. Especially,
and I think it's a fair one.
I agree. I think it is a very fair question. You know, Will Johnson, he was supposed to be that jack-of-all-trades type of player that you just alluded to,
right.
Jeff. And, you know,
yeah.
Keep in mind, you also had Nikita Whitlock in camp, too, somebody that knows the offense,
right.
Was with the
put
team
on
last
IR.
Year, but he got hurt as well. So that was another setback in terms of the narrative. And, you know, you go back to McAdoo, his days in Green Bay, they really always had some type of a fullback.
Well, John Kuhn was there for a long time.
And he was heavily involved, even
absolutely.
As an offensive player, receiver. I think it's a very good question, Jeff. I mean, to give you the rationale, I mean, I think part of it may be, you know, they just didn't feel anybody was out on the market that could play like a Will Johnson or a Whitlock, know their system, be versatile, and so forth, or they felt that the tight ends, like you mentioned, could make do without having necessarily a fullback on the roster.
Yeah, I just find it odd that they didn't do that.
It's a fair question,
Howard,
though. Yeah.
Howard made an interesting comment yesterday in regards to the O-line. He said that he felt the O-line was smallish. And, you know, except for Flowers and Jerry, that seems to be the case. You know, everybody says, well, these guys got to play better. They got to play better. But, I mean, let's face it, guys. If they're not talented enough, telling them to play better is, I mean, that's just wishful thinking.
Well, I mean, look. In terms of the offensive line, Jeff, Justin Pugh, I think, has actually played pretty well this year. And I think Weston Richburg has been fine. I don't think he's been as good as he was last year, but I think he's been fine. I think Justin Pugh is rounding himself into a top upper half of the guards in the league. I think he's playing pretty well, to be honest with you. You don't see him make many mistakes. In terms of the tackles, look, Bobby Hart was a seventh-round pick. There was a reason he was a seventh-round pick. Now, he's a guy you're developing, but there are some things he still needs to get better at, and we've seen Eric Flowers, you know, struggles adjusting to left tackle. You know, you hope he's getting better and he's improving, but, you know, there's been some growing pains early on this year. I think there's no question that Eric Flowers has the physical talent. Richburg and Pugh have the talent. That's why they're playing well. I mean, John Jerry's a massive man. He's like 330 pounds. And quite frankly, I think John Jerry's been okay at guard. I don't think he's been a big problem either. I think when you're looking at the issues here, I think you're looking at the two tackle spots, and you have young guys there that are still learning and figuring things out. Two second-year guys that have fewer than 20 starts on their NFL ledger.
Well, I mean, that's all true, but, you know, I mean, nothing's going to change in regards to changing plays on the offensive line this year.
Right.
I mean, they are what they are, and nothing's going to change until next year. So, I mean, you know, I don't want to say they got to play better, but, I mean, what the hell other option is there?
No, look, Jeff, you're right. It sounds stupid and it sounds simple, but I think at least when you're dealing with younger players, like Hart and like Flowers, there is a chance for guys to get better. You know, if you're in the league for 8-9 years, you are who you are at that point. But, you know, all these giant guys on the offensive line, they've been in the league for fewer than 5 years. They're all relatively young. Even Pugh and Richburg, you know, they've only been in the league for, you know, 3 and 4 years each. So I still think there is time for these guys to get better. Now, the discouraging part of it, Lance, is that these guys have played together for a while. So there shouldn't be a chemistry issue here. Even with Bobby Harden, he was at right tackle an awful lot in the preseason. It's not like they didn't have a lot of time together.
And he played last season, too. Remember, he had a start. He was in 9 games
Jets,
last season.
Right? Right tackle against the Jets?
I believe so. Yeah. It may have been the Jet game. But he did have experience on the right side of the line. So, I mean, I agree with you. The only other thing I'll add, and I'm not saying that this is an excuse, but, you know, new offensive line coach. They were working on some new schemes and, you know, how to put their hands and so forth. So, you know, new terminology and how Solari likes to play as opposed to Flaherty, you know, may change things up in terms of how they're experimenting. But chemistry-wise, yes. This group has been together. You know, Marshall Newhouse is going to return at some point. So there will
be. He is out of the boot, by the way.
Yeah, so that is obviously encouraging that they'll probably have him back at some point. And we'll see whether or not Will Beatty, you know, is going to get an opportunity also. I mean, he's been utilized in practice, but the key is, do the coaches see something in him in practice? And this is important to know, John. You know, a lot of fans, they look at the roster like, oh, it's a no-brainer. You take the veteran and you move him in place of the rookie. I'm sure a lot of fans, and I've seen it on Giants chat, but you don't know what these coaches are seeing from this veteran in practice.
And we aren't allowed to practice in the regular season.
So that's the mystery.
So we can't see this. And folks, to me, and again, this is me making an assumption, and maybe I'm going to be proven wrong, and Will Beatty trots out there as a starter on Sunday. I could be proven wrong. We'll see and find out. But if they were going to go with the veteran Will Beatty, I feel like they would have already. It would have been last week or it would have been the week before.
Because he's already back in the mix, knows the offense. The
he's
comfort
been here
you figure
a few
is
weeks.
There.
He should be in shape. I mean, granted, the offensive line actually played fairly well against Minnesota, so I understand not making a change after that game. I think this is the week. If Will Beatty is not in there this week after the issues last week against Green Bay, I think you can assume that ship has set sail from port and it's on its way across the ocean. And unless somebody else goes down, he's probably not going to move into the starting lineup, Jeff.
One other thing, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, we got to get these 2 games in a row. We need 2 wins in a row. Otherwise, I mean, you can kiss this season goodbye, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, really, honestly. So,
well, I think
let's get out there and get it done.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, Jeff. Appreciate the phone call. You got it, and thanks so much for weighing in. And some great questions, I think, that Jeff posed, especially with respect to the fullback question.
All fair.
In terms of the importance of these games, and we did touch on that a little bit earlier, you know, notice there's a big difference between the 2015 season and the 2016 season. It has nothing to do with the Giants. What I'm referring to is the state of the NFC East this year. So for everybody who thought, you know, oh, well, the reason why all these teams hung around last year, John, was because everybody was hovering around 500 and below. Now you've got the Eagles and the Cowboys, who each have one loss apiece, the Redskins, who dug themselves out of an old two-hole. You can't take for granted that while we're struggling, that everybody else is struggling, and therefore everybody will just hang around and be in the same group. You can't take that for granted. That narrative was last year. The narrative is not back here this year. So that, to me, is the big difference in terms of when you're evaluating the urgency of these games and the importance of these games.
Now, I will say this, and I'm going to bring this up for everybody here, just so you guys have an idea of this. I'm not sure how much Giant fans have looked at other teams' schedules.
I know which team you're going to bring up.
The Philadelphia Eagles schedule, Lance, is about as difficult as you could possibly imagine, which is why, to me, their loss against the Lions last week, I'm not going to call it a season killer. I think that's a little hyperbole. But I think it seriously damages their ability to make the postseason. And here's why. Folks, I'm going to read you off the rest of the Philadelphia Eagles schedule because it ain't pretty. Here we go. They're 3-1, correct?
Yes.
This is what they got left. At the Redskins.
And they've had their bye already, by the way.
And they've already had their bye, yeah. Correct. At Redskins, road game in the division, tough. Home versus the Vikings, probably the best team in the conference, tough. At Dallas, road game, division, tough. At Giants, road game, division, tough. That's right, 3 out of the next 4 games on the road against division opponents. After that, home versus the Falcons, best team in the NFC Central. At the Seahawks, best team in the NFC West. Home versus the Packers, Aaron Rodgers. At the Bengals, a perennial playoff team in the AFC. Home versus the Redskins, division. At Ravens, we'll see how tough they are this week. And then the Giants and Cowboys at home to round out the schedule. That, there is in one remotely soft landing spot.
No, you know, gimme game in there.
No, I mean, the Giants still have, you know, the Bears at home, the Lions at home, at Cleveland. Well, you know, no game in this league is easy, but you're like, you know what? These are games that you get fairly confident that your team, if they play well enough, should be able to win. Wow. And the Eagles didn't even finish in a high point of the NFC East last year. I don't know how they wound up with this nightmare of a schedule, but boy, their out-of-division matchups are just really tough. They got matched up with the Seahawks. Remember, the Eagles beat the Giants last year. So if the Giants would have beaten the Eagles...
Aren't we playing the NFC West?
No.
Am I wrong?
Playing the NFC North.
So I'm trying to think of how they got...
Because the Eagles finished in second place last year.
That's right.
Because the Eagles beat us the final game of the year. So they are going to London.
Yeah, as a result of that game.
And that's why I kept yelling at Paul Dottino last year. He didn't want to go to London. I'm like, what? Do you want to go play the Seahawks in Seattle? Does that sound like a better idea?
Yeah.
No. So the Eagles have to go to Seattle to play the Seahawks. And they have to play the Atlanta Falcons
at
home.
Two. And they have
we
back-to-back
get to play
weeks.
The Rams, and we get to play the Saints, which, quite frankly, are two much easier games. And that does make a difference when it comes to the schedule. And the game's already off the board for the Eagles. They already played the Bears. They already played the Lions. And they already played the Browns. So those games are off the schedule, and they already played the Pittsburgh Steelers as well.
So what you're saying is they've won the games that they should be winning. And then it will remain to be seen what happens moving forward.
Let's see how it works
out. And it
for
also
Philly
remains to be seen what
forward.
Those opponents are going to look like, too. Later
absolutely.
On the season
but still,
well, in all fairness,
those are not going to be easy games by any stretch of the imagination.
Not at all. I'm just looking at it in terms of the Cowboys.
And I'll bring up Washington then.
As a means of comparison in Washington, just to see what their stretches are like.
What do you got for Dallas? Read them off.
Dallas
real quick.
Has at Green Bay right before the bye this week.
I was unimpressed with Green Bay last week, but okay. Yeah. That's still a tough
then
game.
Then following the bye, they play the Eagles.
Tough.
At home. Then they visit Cleveland and Pittsburgh back-to-back
Pittsburgh,
weeks.
Tough. Pittsburgh Ravens back-to-back, huh?
Ooh. Home against Baltimore, home against Washington. Then they visit the Vikings. Then they come here to MetLife Stadium to visit the Giants. Home against the Bucks. Home against the Lions, and then at the Eagles.
And since the Cowboys are the worst team in the NFC East last year, they got softer landing spots in the NFC North. taking on the Lions, and in the NFC West, they got to play the 49ers earlier this year.
Correct, which they beat 24-17.
Right. Now, the Redskins, real quickly, folks, I know we want to get back to your calls, but I think this is important. Eagles at home, at Lions, at Bengals, Vikings, Packers back-to-back, but they get those two teams at home rather than on the road. Three straight road games, at Dallas, at Arizona, which is very difficult, at Philly, and then home versus Carolina. We'll see how difficult that is based on how poorly the Panthers have played.
Not look the same, yeah.
At the Bears and home versus the Giants. So the Redskins, I think, to me, have a pretty tough schedule, too. I think Dallas probably is the easiest of them all, which makes sense. That's how the schedule is designed. They finished in last place. They should have an easier schedule. But, look, even with these tougher schedules, remember before the year we said maybe 9 wins will win this division? Nope. Minimum 10. You might need 11. Because right now, unless Dallas loses both quarterbacks as Romo gets healthier, they're winning 10 games based on that schedule, you would think.
And their defense has improved with DeMarcus Lawrence coming back, too. You have to take that into consideration.
I mean, it looks like they're going to win 10. So if you want to, and the Giants already beat them once, so maybe they'll have the tiebreaker, which is great news. You get to 10 and you win the tiebreaker, but I think 9 ain't winning the division. And honestly, I don't think it'll get you into the playoffs in the NFC this year. I think you got to get to 10. So you start the year 2-4. That means you got to go 8-2 the rest of the way.
Puts a lot of pressure on you.
8-2, and the Giants still got to go to Pittsburgh.
Though I think it's possible, and we were talking about this off the air last week, that maybe this is the year where two teams from this division actually make the postseason.
It's been a long time, right?
Especially if you look at the NFC landscape as a whole. So that wouldn't surprise me. But the big point as to why I brought it up in terms of the division disparity was you can't rely on others to do your dirty work.
You
got to
go out and win games yourself.
You have to go out. You can't rely on, you know, the schedule being tough for the Cowboys and the Eagles and things are going to balance out. That's the main point.
201-939-4513. Hopefully that got you guys interested. Ah, oh, Kashawn! I know Kashawn called a different show with different hosts, and I was very, very insulted by the fact you called somebody else and you didn't call us, but that's okay.
Oh, no, don't be like that. Don't
I know,
like
I'm just playing. What's up?
Okay, so I'm about to go on my rant.
Go ahead.
I'm speaking for a very agitated and disappointed New York Giants fan base. And I hope that Mr. Mara is aware. I am just so frustrated with this team. Like, you know how Odell Beckham a couple of weeks ago, he said, like, football is not fun anymore. Well, it's not fun to watch the Giants anymore. I mean, I can't remember the last time the Giants displayed a convincing win. I had to sit there and watch the Cowboys, like, you know, dominate a playoff team in the Cincinnati Bengals. And I was like, man, it must be really nice just to sit back and just watch your team just make art. And the Giants are just not fun. And I appreciate what you guys just did about announcing all the schedules of the remaining, for the remaining games. But the Giants can't score. I mean, how are we going to do anything? I have zero confidence that this team can score.
And it's not going to get any easier this week against Baltimore either. They got a real good defense.
They're top 10 in just about every category.
And how did we add more talent and then put up less points? I thought the Giants, going into the season, I thought the Giants were going to be putting up like 31 to 34 points a game. That's why I wasn't even really worried about the defense, because I thought that teams will have to keep up with our scoring. And it's the exact opposite. Like, it is just mind-boggling to me. For that reason, I think McAdoo is way over his head with the play calling. I think it's, and we talked about this in the offseason, it's one thing to become a head coach prematurely. It's another thing to try to take on the head coaching responsibilities and at the same time be an offensive coordinator. Like, it's just too much. Because let me tell you, I'm no offensive and defensive coordinator, and when I sit on my couch and I watch the Giants and I watch those plays, they are so predictable. I am so sick of seeing the shotgun formation and running the ball. And we seem to do that on every first and second down. Run on first down, run on second down. Okay, well, let me try to pass on third so we can convert. Like, it's awful. It is just, the play calling is terrible. And I know if I can figure out, and I have zero football experience, I know defensive coordinators and players who are being paid millions of dollars can figure it out. The Giants look very, very predictable, which is part of the problem as well.
Well, Kashawn, your point about the lack of scoring and how that surprised you, I think you alluded to the fact that the big reason why it struggled again is the run game. Because I think most people anticipated, Kashawn, when you looked at the numbers and where they left off last season, remember they had that four-game stretch at the end of the year, and people thought, all right, the offensive line comes back, they continue this momentum, that the numbers would at least improve. But, you know, I'm looking back at the 2015 numbers. The Giants finished 19th because of that four-game stretch. But for the majority of the season, John, they were in the mid-20s. And you look at the rankings now again, and the Giants are back in the same position. So That's why I think there hasn't been a drastic movement upwards in terms of points per game, Keshawn, because the running game has remained where it was pretty much for the majority of last season, and the passing game has taken a step
right, in. And I will say this, too, and I think they're related to Lance, and we talked about it before. If you run the ball effectively, it changes the way defenses play it. But, Keshawn, and let's be honest, you know, you talk about why would you add talent but become worse, and I think that's a fair question because the Giants' wide receiver core obviously is better this year than it was last
right.
year. No one would argue that fact, but I think the issues are twofold. One, even though the numbers don't necessarily show it, I don't think that Eli Manning feels he's being protected to the point where he's completely comfortable in the pocket. And then number two, and the number one is not an excuse for number two. I'm not trying to make it sound that way. Eli Manning's not playing as well this year as he played the last 2 years. And I think you put those two things together, that's how you have more talent, but you don't have the same or better results.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was going to get on Mr. Eli, too, because I'm not feeling him right now either. And I didn't know, like, maybe he was hurt and he's just trying to play. But and more specifically, because I'm still not over the Redskin game. And I know that game was terrible and we had all those penalties. But despite all that, all we had to do was kick a field goal and go home. And for Eli to make that errant throw like that in the middle of the field, that's something that I would expect a Dak Prescott or a Carl Wentz to do. That's not something that I expect from my 35-year-old two-time Super Bowl MVP. And yes, he definitely needs to play better. And I think, and again, you're right about the line. I think he's anticipating the rush when it's not there. And I don't know what happened because this is the same line from last year, which played okay. So I don't know what happened. I don't know, maybe if he got that hit in the Redskin game and he's afraid to get hit. But if Eli doesn't play well, it all starts with him. So you're right. But the question is, can he get over himself and get over that unnecessary fear in a week? You know, so we could win this game and turn our season around. Because if he's still shook, then it really doesn't matter, you know, if our quarterback isn't leading the team to glory. So I'm just calling you guys to vent. I mean, that's all I really have. So frustrated because I see the talent on the team. And you look at this roster, and even for Green Bay, the Giants should have beat – if anything, we should be, 4-1 right now. You know, the Giants could have beat the Packers. We darn sure should have beat the Redskins. And you just see us, we never live up to our expectations. And it's just so frustrating year in and year in and year out. And now we're on the verge of our season being done because of just missed opportunities. So
thank you, Keshawn.
Hi, Keshawn. Good call.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
The phone call. The only thing that I'll play devil's advocate with based on her last statement, I've heard a lot of Giants fans bring this up. In fairness, if Terrence Williams runs out of bounds, who knows what happens with that game.
It's a 60-something yard kick to tie
but
the
just,
game.
I'm just throwing out
overtime.
There that for all of the games that you want to point out that could have went the opposite way, you could say the same thing about the close games that the Giants won.
Right.
My
they only beat the Cowboys by one. They only beat the Saints by
Victor
three.
Victor Cruz converts on that third down.
Correct.
If he doesn't, Drew Brees gets the ball back. Who
then
knows
again,
how that game. That's all I'm throwing
Beckham
out there.
Beckham could have caught the pass before
of
that
course.
One his hands.
Well,
but,
I mean, but I'm just saying when you play a lot of close games, some are going to bounce your way and some are not.
That's why I hate playing the, oh, we should have won that game. Oh, we should have lost that game.
I agree. That's why I never go that route either.
Because what happens in individual plays in close games is what determines who wins those close games. You can't go back and say, I should have won this one, I should have lost that one. You either win it or lose. Now, you can take stuff from those wins or losses, and I do think that there's a difference between losing a close game and getting obliterated. If you get obliterated, you know, you probably have some real problems. If you lose a close game, couple plays here or there, you could turn things around. That's fixable. So, just a couple things. 201-939-4513. I want to add one other thing to Keshawn to what she said in the first part of her statement, and then we'll move on. I know Giant fans probably think of, you know, John Mara as like the separated, segregated, rich owner that owns the team, and it's a business for him, and he doesn't care. And I get it. That's how a lot of owners are. I can tell you guys, and I'm being completely sincere, he cares. And I know how big you Giant fans out there are, and I know how much you guys care. He cares as much or more than every single one of you. When we get on the elevator to go downstairs after these Giant games and the Giants lose, the look on his face will turn you to stone. He is mad. He is annoyed. He cares. Trust me. Trust me. That's all I'll say. 201-939-4513. Dean in Connecticut. Dean's up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Dean, how are you?
What's going on, gentlemen? How are we doing?
Doing well, Dean. How are you?
Hey, not bad. Keyshawn kind of stole some of my thunder, but
that's right.
She's always amazing, so I got to give it up to her.
Good caller.
But I want to say a lot of people that are, like, thinking, saying that Eli is done and this and that. Let me just make this point, okay? When Eli Manning had a solid pass protection, we're going back a few years now, he would pick you apart if you gave him 3 to 4 seconds to throw the ball like the Giants D was giving Aaron Rodgers the other day.
That's true.
If Eli can step on his back foot and not have to, you know what I mean, and throw into the ball instead of running around for his life, he is probably one of the best quarterbacks in the league, but he doesn't have that right now.
I think that's fair.
The O-line needs help, and I know a lot of people are saying, why not put Will Beatty at left tackle? You know what? After the performance that I've seen Flower put up against the Packers, I mean, I don't even think that would be a bad idea. As Paulie Dottino said, you need a road-grading right tackle with some attitude. I think we know Flower's got a little bit of attitude. So, I mean, it only makes sense for me to try to kid out at right tackle. If Bill Beatty's healthy, let's see what he's got to do. But we need to be able to run the ball to get those safeties to play closer to the line of scrimmage so we can burn them deep with the pass. Running the ball sets up the pass, sets up the play action. And if we can't run the ball, defensive, no, they're going to force us into a one-dimensional team, and that's passing. Am I right or wrong?
Well, but, Dean, and I'm not saying anything you mentioned is wrong, but here's the one thing that I want to counter with respect to your point about it makes sense to move Flowers to right tackle. In this day and age, and even the Giants have well documented this, with JPP and Olivier Vernon switch sides, teams are going to try to take advantage of weaknesses or areas where they think they can capitalize on. So whether you put Flowers on the left side or whether you put Flowers on the right side, you're still not avoiding the top opposing pass rushers.
No, Von Miller plays over the right
exactly.
tackle. J.J. Watt plays over the right tackle.
So it's not so simple to say, well, you move Flowers to right, now we have the road grader, and then they're never going to pass rush him on that side.
Where does Ryan Kerrigan play, by the way? Over the right tackle.
Oh, yeah.
So that's my point. My point is that in order to be a solid defense in this day and age, you have to have two legitimate pass rushers.
By the way, Cameron Jordan for the Saints, where does he play? Over the right tackle. In fact, you can argue of the teams that Giants have played this year, the better pass rusher has been on the right side.
They have.
Not the left side.
So, and they're going to move depending on where you line up your offensive line.
Correct.
So I don't think it's so simple to say, oh, you move him to the right and then voila, no more issues anymore.
Good point.
You're going to move guys around.
Well, I'm not saying it's going to be voila. That's the end of the story.
Well, I was maybe throwing in a lot of hyperbole, but I get your point. Yes.
All right, and another thing about the defense, and I'll take this off air.
Yes.
Back in 07 when Spags was a coordinator, we were getting pressure with just our front four. We didn't have to blitz. We weren't doing nothing. We can't get pressure blitzing, and that's causing the susceptibility of the defensive backs in the backfield. They're having to cover more ground. So people trying to bash the pass rush and bash the secondary. Listen, if we can't get home with our front four, that gives the receivers way more time to get open and find spots in the secondary, and that's harder for the secondary as well. Thanks, gents. I'll take it off.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If you try to rush with four guys and you don't get there, I don't care if you have six or seven guys dropping into coverage. Someone's eventually going to get it open if you sit back there long enough. You get the scramble drill, guys run around, and all that sort of stuff. So if you don't get there with four, it's not going to work.
And you can't afford to bring the fifth or the sixth guy for the secondary.
That's why for the Giants, teams aren't blitzing the Giants much. They're getting there with four guys offensively. I'm flipping the script here a little bit now. If the Giants could protect against those four men, even with those two safeties deep, Eli would have time to find somebody. The problem is that if the other team's able to put 70 guys in coverage and your quarterback's getting pressured, he doesn't have a damn chance at hell. If he has 4 or 5 seconds with seven men in coverage, yeah, he could figure it out. But if you have no time and they got seven guys in coverage, you are finish. But offensively for the Giants, or defensively rather, look, the pass pressure, and look, Spagnuolo said over yesterday, sacks isn't a stat they're overly concerned with. But the overall feel as to whether or not they're affecting the quarterback's play of the opponent, I don't think they're affecting the play of the quarterback's opponent enough in terms of hurries, hits,
making
sacks,
them uncomfortable, and so forth.
Throwing them out of rhythm the whole 9 yards.
With that being said, I still think the secondary deserves a lot of credit for its performance against the Packers.
Absolutely.
Because what those guys did on the back end to hold Aaron Rodgers to 259 yards and pick him off twice when he had the best interception rate, the lowest rate, I should say, in NFL history, I mean, that is quite an accomplishment with the lack of a pass rush. Now,
and it wasn't done easily, by the way, that 259. There was scrambling. There was
he had to
earn
every single one of those yards.
There were not open wide receivers all over the place.
Now, you can't assume that you're going to get that consistency every single game without a pass rush.
Right.
That's That's the thing.
And right now, I haven't seen a Giants practice report. I'll try and find it, but they could have more injuries back there today.
They could, but I think in terms of JPP and Olivier Vernon, I don't think there's any
concern,
even though they've been on the injury report. Yes, the secondary. Well, you have Darian Thompson still trying to work his way back, Matt Burhe recovering from the concussion. That's why Andrew Adams has been lined up alongside Landon Collins. They've been using Leon Hall in various positions and so forth. And, you know, who knows with DRC and Eli Apple. Eli Apple, you know, the re-aggravation of the injury, and DRC, who, you know, played throughout the last game all hurt. You have to wonder, you know, how many hands on deck are you going to have? The good news is, at least on paper, what Baltimore presents compared to Green Bay, I mean, the receiving corps, Steve Smith will see if he plays, but I don't think they have nearly as much depth as what Green Bay presents. But with that being said, you know, you still need to worry about defending the tight ends, and you still need to be able to stop the run. And remember, the secondary plays a big role in stopping the run, too. People tend to forget about that. How many times did we talk about Prince Amukamara as being solid in terms of his run-stopping ability, not just necessarily his coverage? So you need the corners to be healthy enough to be willing to take on that physical contact near the line of scrimmage and so forth. That's also big.
Mental. Giants don't practice Friday, so it's...
And you were talking about that earlier in the
obviously.
Show. Well, I was still letting you have a good time search through Twitter, so...
Shut up.
While I was passing time.
But they will practice tomorrow. But the Giants will release their official injury report later on this afternoon, probably around 1:30 or so, when Ben McAdoo addresses the media. So we'll have that for you. That'll be obviously questionable, doubtful, or out.
And you may have a few guys with game time decisions like we've had in the last few weeks, too. I mean, Rashad Jennings, for example.
Who knows with Jennings? I mean, the guys, every week the last 4 weeks says, I'm going to play, and he doesn't play. So,
Jennings at least admitted that to the media this week, which I found comical. Listen, I'm always optimistic, so don't necessarily take my word for it.
I have given up trying to predict whether or not Rashad Jennings is going to play every week. Talk to me an hour and a half before game time, and I'll tell you if he's going to play.
Well, between Darkwa, Rainey, and Perkins, you know, that may be the rotation if Jennings can't go. Baltimore, like Green Bay, is up there statistically, John, in stopping the run. They're fourth against the run in the NFL. You went from the number one rushing defense to now the fourth best rushing defense in the NFL.
All right, let's do it. Two more calls before we say goodbye. Ralphie's up in the Bronx. What's up, Ralph? How are you?
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Ralph.
You know, I'm listening to all these Giants fans. Everybody's going bananas. Relax. I'm giving the Aaron Rodgers line. Relax. We were not really penciled in to win those two games. We had a Washington game, of course, we let it get away from us. But the other two games, did we have chances? Yes. Played two of the almost, I mean, I think Minnesota's the best team, and I still think we were in the game. We don't punt that fumble in the beginning of the game. It's a whole different ballgame. So, you know what? I'm just saying, relax. We're talking about Eli Manning here. All right? I don't care. He's been off. He's throwing up passes. If anybody can figure it out, it's going to be him. And my question to you guys is, you know, they got cover two and all that. But in Gilbride's system, even when they had cover two, we still threw the ball in our field and they let our players go make plays. We got Odell Beckham who leaps out the moon. Sterling Shepard who jumps out the moon. You know what? Cover two or not, let's throw the ball deep and let's let our players try to go make a play.
Double yeah, but Ralph, the one difference, though, when Kevin Gilbride was here, except for that last season when things went bad in 2013, right?
Yeah.
When things went really bad, they had a pretty good offensive line.
And you had a good run game,
you could protect, and you could run the football with Brandon Jacobs and Ahmad Bradshaw.
I understand that. I know.
That's
but changed. You know what? At the end of the day, like, our rushing game wasn't great last year, and Eli still was putting up numbers. Am I right or am I wrong?
That's true. But, Robin, you know what? And the one thing I know fans didn't like Kevin Gilbride's offense, they always complained about it. You know, I'm sure people hated those two Super Bowls. But the one thing about the Kevin Gilbride offense is that it was very adaptable. And that's what I think was its strength and its weakness. Depending on what the defense did, routes would change. Receivers would do different things, right? And so there was always an answer to whatever the defense presented you. If the defense plays outside leverage, you run an in cut. If it runs, you know, inside leverage, you run a post corner. Whatever the case might be. And that's why it was an effective offense no matter what type of defense you played against it. At the same time, that made it very difficult for certain players to learn because there were so many midstream adjustments. And, you know, all those times where fans complained, oh, you know, he went one way and Eli threw the other.
This communication or something
right,
like
and,
that
you know, what's
about,
going
yeah.
on? Oh, yeah. You know, and you get all the shrugging of the shoulders after the plays. So it was good and bad because of that part of the system. Remember, Ben McAdoo's system doesn't have as many of those sight adjusts in the middle of the play. So I think that's why it's maybe something new that Giant fans haven't really experienced before.
I agree with you guys. I truly do. But sometimes, you know what? Sometimes you got to throw the ball up in the air and let your player go get it. You understand what I'm saying? Let's run Odell deep, double coverage or not. Let's throw it up in the air and see if Odell can outjump somebody and go get the ball.
Yeah, Ralph, you know what?
You got to take some chances.
I hear what you're saying, but it's not like Odell's A.J. Green's in 6'6". You know, Odell Beckham Jr. is my height.
Jump over the moon. I mean, let's be honest. He has a 37-inch vertical.
He does. That's true.
6'6 and not. 6'6 and not. It doesn't matter. If he can go up there and go get it, let's go get it.
But
at the end of the day, if it could be a turnover, I mean, I'm not saying let's just go throw the ball up in the air all day. But, you know, if we're on the 50 and it's 3rd and 5, let's throw the ball to the end zone. Let Odell try to go get it. If not get interception, it's just as good as a punt. And things like that, you know, interception numbers and all that, that could be misconstrued.
All right,
if we're
I'll buy that.
At the 50, throw it up in the air.
I'll buy that. That's fair, Ralph. Appreciate the call.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, Ralph. Appreciate the vote.
You know, if you want on a 3rd and long, instead of punting it, take a shot down the field and throw, you know, one-on-one or, you know, maybe there's safety help or something like that and roll the dice to Beckham. He's that good. I'm okay with that.
No, it's just a matter of when then the guy returns it to midfield or into your own territory. Listen,
well,
there's always
the
plus and minuses. If every interception was picked off deep down the field and then you immediately tackled the guy, I'd say, sure, hey, go for that, because you're right, it's just as effective as a punt. But then it's the time when they return it, yeah. Then you say to yourself, oh, well, they probably should have dumped it down for 7 yards as opposed to going for the 30-yard bomb.
That's a good point.
That's the problem. It's always a catch-22 under those circumstances. I mean, you do want to take your chances down the field. Listen, Baltimore, we were talking about this early in the show, John, they're also in that catch-22 scenario. They want to open up the field down. But, you know, when you take those chances, your chances for getting those turnovers increased go up as well, and they go hand in hand. And right now, this is not a team that can afford to have an extra 2 takeaways a game. They just can't do that because
that's
they're not
true
getting
too.
The takeaways in return to help balance it off.
All right, final call of the show. They did finally get 2 last week on defense. Maybe that trend can continue against Joe Flacco. He has thrown some picks in recent weeks. Scott in Washington, D.C. Scott, what's up?
Hey, guys. Can you remind me, what were the 3 things the head coach said he wanted? It was poise, discipline, and what was the 3rd one?
Poise, discipline. You know what? That's a great question. I'm trying to remember. Let me look that up for you. Scott, honestly, I don't get wrapped up into that stuff.
Taking care of the Duke or something?
Yeah, he did. He has focused on that. Protecting the Duke, he has said.
Okay. Well, I think so far he's got a failing grade on all 3. But put that aside, maybe it's too early to tell. Maybe they can turn the season around. My point is that...
Oh, resiliency, I think, was the 3rd one. I think resiliency.
Resiliency. Okay. So bouncing back from, say, an 8-minute drive at the end, beginning of the game.
Correct.
That didn't work out so well. All right. I'm going to take a step back and look a little bit more at the macro. And when I look at the macro, I see 5 years of lousy football. 9-7, 7-9, 6-10, 6-10, 2-3. And frankly, all I hear on this show is a sugarcoating and excuses. And there is none. This team is averaging 1.6 touchdowns a game.
Yeah, the offense has been bad. Yeah, the offense has been bad. What else do you want me to say?
1.6 touchdowns a game.
Yeah, we agree with you.
I heard you all saying, and Lance talked about it just today, that there was momentum on the offense from last year.
Scott, I'm going to cut you off here. Scott, I'm going to jump in here because what you're saying I came out with is completely wrong. I was putting in perspective the fact that in 2015 – the final 4 games, the running game skyrocketed, and that the optimism, the expectations were it would carry over into 16.
But it hasn't.
But it hasn't. Okay, that was the point.
But the head coach has said that – the head coach of this team has said that is loser talk. That's like saying Janelle Jernigan, who caught, you know, 3 touchdown passes in the last 2 games of the season 3 years ago when they were out of it – has some carryover effect.
Now, Scott, in fairness, if you go back...
You have a new team.
Now, Scott, in fairness, if you go back to when Gerald Jernigan did that, I made that point the entire spring and summer that you can't count on Gerald Jernigan because of 1 game. If you listened back then. I tried to rain on everybody's parade on Gerald Jernigan, trust me.
Yeah, it's that's my point. We have the team we have, and I see consistency. I see consistently lousy football. 1 week it's the offense, 1 week it's the defense. Let me just tell you this.
Sure.
I've never seen this before. This was in the – when did Donnell get his concussion? The Minnesota game?
2 games ago, yeah.
It was the Minnesota game. Yeah, Anthony Barr.
The running game, I saw – Donnell get blown up and put on his butt in the running game on a block. I saw Jerry pull into a hole and land on his butt. In the same game, the UCLA running back put his shoulder into two blitzers, completely ineffective technique. He's not coached that way to put a shoulder on a blitzing linebacker to try and protect his $24 million quarterback. Come on.
Okay.
In terms of Larry Donnell struggling blocking, is that your point?
Scott, we aren't arguing with you. Larry Donnell has struggled blocking. You're right.
All right. And you know, any fair assessment, Eli, would show that, you know, if you included the throws that he threw into defenders' hands or gut this year, he'd be upside down probably 4 TDs to 10 interceptions. There were 2 easy picks dropped in Minnesota, 2 easy picks dropped by Washington, and 2 additional easy picks that were dropped in Green Bay. That's 6 more right there on top of his 4.
I mean, but Scott, let's go back to your point. Let's go back to your point about the whole sugarcoating comment, because what I don't understand is we've been talking about these issues. We've been saying they've been well documented. Who's sugarcoating them? It's the obvious.
It's the talk about, oh, this week they got to travel on a Monday, or they have a short week, or they have injuries, or they're playing in a hot city, or they're playing in a cold city. That is all beside.
Well, that's
the
always
point.
Part of the media narrative.
No, but Scott, hold on,
this
Scott.
About, it's,
this
it sounds like game is about imposing your will on the other team.
Right.
I don't care if they got 9 men in the box.
And Scott, what did I say, Scott? But what do we say all off season long? What the Giants need to get better at is winning the battle at the line of scrimmage. That's why they went out there inside Olivier Vernon. That's why they went out inside Snacks Harrison. And we talked about them having to improve the offensive line all year long. I mean,
okay.
This
then,
is stuff we've
then,
talked about.
Then
no,
if it's not the personnel, then it's the coaching. I remember
they just 2 changed
years ago,
head coaches.
I remember 2 years ago, Tony Romo having 6.5 seconds. With his feet planted firmly in the ground. Now, maybe they were coached in this Green Bay game to not let Rodgers get out of the pocket, but 6 seconds? You can run 80 yards down the field in 6 seconds.
Yeah, Scott, you're right. The pass rush was nearly not good enough. Scott, everything you're saying, we're agreeing with you. That's why I don't understand why you're upset with us.
All right, I'm not upset with you. I'm upset with the excuses.
But again, I mean, you're bringing up a lot of excuses that have been brought up in the media narrative, you know, in terms of the weather, the quick turnarounds. I mean, I can find you articles upon articles that have brought that up.
And, Scott, and the thing about it is that we can't just come on the show and say the Giants stink and then we're going to take your calls. I mean, we have to talk about the individual details of each game and get into a lot of the minutiae. We do an hour show 5 days a week. We can't just come on and say, boy, the Giants' offensive line stinks. Your calls are 201-939-4513. I mean, we aren't going to do that.
Well, and you talk about how to correct the issues and how to work around it.
I appreciate that. It's now or never. This season is in the balance, and unless it gets turned around this week, you're going to hear a lot more upset callers the rest of the year.
And look, we understand that.
We've heard from it in the past.
We get it. Look, Giants and Scott, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of the show. We expect Giant fans to be upset. Ownership understands Giant fans are upset. They want to win. Fans want to win. So, I mean, it's part of the deal. We get it. We come in here. You think we're happy? I mean, hell. Jesus, this show's going to stink on Monday with Meadow and Dottino if the Giants lose this week. You think he wants to come in and host the show after a Giants loss?
Well, it's bad enough I got to deal with Dottino.
Hell no.
Then you get into the topic.
Right.
But yeah.
And look, guys, I mean, look, we have to go into this detailed stuff. I mean, we're trying to inform. We're trying to, you know, bring good information and good facts. And I know sometimes people think it comes off as excuses, but all things happen for a reason. And you can't just say, well, Eli Manning stinks this year, so the Giants lose games. And again, I'm just giving these an examples. I'm not saying they're actually true. Same thing with the offensive line. The offensive line, for example, played pretty darn well against the Vikings. They played a good game. Eli wasn't hit a lot in that game. Ran the ball fairly well. Ben McAdoo said it. Eli said it. The offensive line played really well against Minnesota. And by the way, they ran the ball all over Washington in that game too. So as much as the offensive line has had issues in a couple games this year, they've been pretty darn good in other games too. All right? And I think for the first 4 weeks, we had people calling up the Showland saying how much the offensive line had exceeded expectations. We got a lot of those calls.
Because they were disappointed based on the preseason.
Right.
That was indicative of what was going to happen in the regular season.
So when I made the same about the offensive line before, it was just kind of like, we're not just going to give this generic, not necessarily true statement and move on. We have to dig into the reasons why.
Of course.
We're trying to figure out the underlying reasons why the team's struggling. You're not just going to say, well, Eli Manning's terrible. Oh, this guy stinks. Well, why? There are reasons that people struggle. Now, sometimes somebody's not just good enough. You know, Uwaniunga last year, God bless him. We love him. We're happy he was here. He's a great guy. He's not good enough to cover Jason Witten. He's just not.
Limitations.
He's just not.
In terms of the skill set.
But we know what Eli Manning's capable of when the situation around him is right. That's why we get into some of the deeper stuff
as here. A comparison to what's happened in previous seasons to what's happening now. But, I mean, the one thing, and I think everybody would agree, you know, right now it's so up and down.
Right.
You see an offense that went 3-for-3 in the red zone against the Cowboys and was throwing the ball like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you see an offense that has trouble in the red zone and trouble moving the ball against the Green Bay Packers. And we're not that far between both of those contests.
And
it's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. That's been the biggest problem right now.
And the Giants moved the ball up and down the field against the Saints. They just kept turning the damn thing over.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like these issues are the same week to week. There's always reasons and deeper things as to why things happen. And that's what we're trying to get to, guys. We're not trying to make excuses. We're not trying to say you guys shouldn't be upset. We're not trying to tell you that it's all, you know, sugar and rainbows over here.
Lollipops, too.
And lollipops, of course, because they're 2-3. And it's not a must-win game this week, but it's very important. I mean, we're not downplaying it, folks. You better win this game, or we're going to walk in on Monday, and you know what? Then you are looking at a must-win game. If the Giants are going to London 2-4, I will happily say that is a must frickin' win game. You're 2-5 at the bye, and Dallas is sitting there at 5-1 or even 4-2. Guess what? You're in a lot of trouble.
It's hard to make up that type of ground. Once again, you're relying on help, and it's not going to get any easier just sticking to this week's game plan. I mean, Baltimore is a very well-disciplined, fundamentally sound team, similar to Green Bay in terms of their ability to close in on the gaps and so forth. So, you know, this is not all of a sudden snap your fingers, voila, you're back at home, and then things are going to change. I know I'm using voila a little too much today. Probably should cut that out of the jargon.
I like it.
But anyway, that my point is that, you know, because every week we go over the opponents.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not just necessarily praising these teams because they're statistically good. I mean, from the eye test as well. Now, these opponents, Vikings, Packers, Ravens, this is now 3 weeks
right.
in a row. We're talking about top 10 defenses across the board. Now, this is not fluky numbers. These teams have been consistent.
And we point out strengths and weaknesses. I harped last week about how the Packers' offensive numbers were way down this year and how the two corners are out and the Giants should be able to attack through the air. We talked a ton about that. And the other thing I want to touch on, I know we're way over because Scott got us on a little bit of a rant here, but that's okay.
Yeah.
The injuries. No, injuries aren't an excuse, but injuries are a reason. If you don't have Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and Eli Apple, it changes things. It just does. Steve Spagnuolo said it yesterday at his media availability. Let me bring it up, and this will be the last thing we say.
Of all these injuries.
Do you have it there?
Let me try to bring it up. I think I got it.
I got it here, too. Hold on. And then we'll say goodbye. Dave Dominic wants to eat lunch and so do we. Here we go.
Yes,
here we
that's
go.
The reason why we need to wrap up.
I'm hungry. They got barbecue in there. I'm ready
to
roll.
I'm sure the fans are dying to hear.
They got some cornbread. Yes. It's going to be delicious.
Wow, I haven't even taken a look. You got a head start on me.
I scout that stuff out every
man.
Week. You
wow.
got that straight. Here we go.
I'll have to work that into the pregame scouting report.
Let me see here. Where is the question about Apple and DRC? Is it not in the transcript?
You know, he brought that up last week too, John. I don't have last week's in front of me, but
here we go.
How difficult it was, I think, was a question.
You have
right?
a lot of moving parts in the defensive backfield. Does it limit you at all these past couple weeks in what you can do as a defensive coordinator? Yeah, a little bit. We certainly want to play fast, but we don't want to scramble their brains. Andrew Adams has done a nice job. Atlanta's been a rock back there. Leon Hall has really stepped in. Being a safety when he's really a corner, they've done a nice job. It would be nice to get some of those guys back. It would really help. All the guys that have had all the reps in safety and training camp and the OTAs, you would like to get those guys back out there. It's part of what happens in the league. It would help a lot. It would really help. That's the quote.
Well, I've brought this up.
It's not an excuse. It's a reason.
I've brought this up multiple weeks. Go back to the Saints game. They had two sacks in that game, John. And the reason why they were very effective in limiting Drew Brees, they got pressure from every angle. But you know why? Because Spags told DRC out of the slot, I have confidence in the back end. Blitz, we'll give you the green light. Leon Hall had a sack in that game too. But when you take these guys out of the equation, there's only so many risks that you want to take under those circumstances.
Correct.
That's not an excuse. That's reality.
Yeah.
You have to protect the back end of your defense. You're not going to have Andrew Adams and Landon Collins blitz, and then you're going to keep these corners on an island who don't have nearly as much experience. I mean, that's just common sense right there.
I mean, look how much better the defense looked in the first two games. So much better. When you have corners that can cover one-on-one, man-on-man, and we talked about how little space Brees had to operate with his three pretty good wide receivers, by the way, Brandon Cooks, Willie Snead, and Michael Thomas. They just weren't open a whole lot because he had three good corners covering. So,
and he saw a lot of pressure in his face, too.
It does change things. And look, folks, there's a reason that the good teams in this league have the most talent and the worst teams have the least talent. If you have less talented players on the field, you're not going to be as good. Duh.
And you're not going to be as consistent, too.
Right.
Which is well documented.
Anyway, we should say goodbye.
Yes.
Thank you, Lance.
Absolutely.
That was a spirited final 10
minutes.
It
was a spirited.
Everybody, thanks for joining us. For Lance Menno, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time on Giants.com. If you enjoyed this program, you can check out more of it on Monday at noon, or you could tune into the Coors Light Giants Game Day pregame show on WFAN on Sunday morning at 11:30, or stop by MetLife Central where we do the show from. You can come by, say hello, and see how short Lance Menno really is. For him.
Yes, make sure you throw that in.
I'm Schmelk. We'll see you next time on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.
Have a good one.